shopping for a bloody wedding band now.
Fuck, I said with even more vehemence. That means Dagon will hear about it too. Ian shot me an irate glance.
As if I care what he thinks.
His sharp wits must have been dulled by his horror over being outed as a supposedly married man. Dagon now knows I'm alive, but he doesn't know what identity I'm hiding under. He does know that we've partnered up, so how long do you think it will take him to figure out that I'm really Veritas once he hears you've suddenly married a law guardian? Ian's brows came together in the darkest of frowns.
Everything you've done to hide yourself, exposed, I said, shuddering, just like that. Damn it, Shun Chong, how could you?
But it wasn't her fault. I shouldn't have let Shun Chong get close enough to me to hurt her this way. I'd known her feelings were deep, and I'd still sought comfort in her arms from time to time. Like Ian, she'd also sensed that I'd been holding back, both in bed and out of it. But I'd never dropped my guard with her. My refusal had hurt Shun Chong deeply, as had my disavowal of serious relationships. Now my supposed about-face by marrying a virtual stranger must have been too much for her. I had only myself to blame for her talking to others about her pain. Still, all the people I needed to get justice for didn't deserve to have Dagon beat me because of this. Ian didn't either, and he needed me to ensure his victory. The clock might be winding down on my alias, but the game wasn't over yet. We'll deal with Menkaris by playing the happy couple. Then we'll have to move fast to kill Dagon.
How? Ian asked bluntly. Even if we could fool Menkaris into believing our marriage was genuine, albeit supremely idiotic, our plans for Dagon required time. We don't have that now.
I know. My brain ached from all the ideas I thought up and immediately discarded. My distress must have been palpable, because Silver whined and pressed himself against my leg. I bent to pet him while trying to figure out how we could compress our original, elaborate plan into a much speedier version. Ian knelt next to me.
Didn't mean to snap at you. None of this is your fault.
No, I said with a humorless laugh. It's not one of your ex-lovers that blew our plans all to hell.
Could have been,
he said, flashing me a sudden grin.
Statistically, it should have been. Despite your vast age, you've probably limited yourself to a mere 4 or 5 lovers a year. I've frequently gone through that number in a single night, so my exes doubtless outnumber yours.
Since he'd vastly overestimated my lovers, he was right. I do remember what you were doing when I found you, I said.
Eh, that.
Ian's wave dismissed the carnival-themed orgy.
Wasn't even really enjoying myself.
I agree. You looked more miserable than anything else. His brows went up.
Miserable might be stretching it.
I sighed. Come on, Ian. You thought you only had 100 weeks to live. You chose to spend that time not with your friends or members of your line, or even strangers who found you attractive. Instead, you spent it with people you paid to be there. That had to be horribly lonely, making that orgy only a few steps up from self-flagellating on the misery scale. A sardonic smile twisted his mouth.
How like you to ignore the surface and see what's beneath. Most people don't bother. You're wrong about one thing, though. Being with my friends would have been more miserable. Then I'd have to think about how much I'd miss them. Still, with time running short, I did want more memories of what it felt like to have people touch me without meaning me harm. Knew it would be some of the last I'd get, since I had less than 2 years before Dagon came to collect my soul. Of course, the orgy only served to make me feel more alone. May as well have been slamming doors in an empty house just to pretend the noises they made were other people's voices.
I touched his face. I know what it's like to medicate pain in unhealthy ways. I sometimes get judgy and forget that, but when I was recovering from my worst trauma, I did things that don't give me room to criticize you or anyone else. He covered the hand I held to his face with his own.
Perhaps one day you'll tell me about your worst trauma.
I glanced away, catching a glimpse of his sardonic smile again, before he dropped his hand. At once I missed his touch, but I was still unable to open up the way he wanted me to.
So Shun Chong's actions aren't your fault,
he said, going back to his original point. Silver picked up on my inner turmoil. He whined again, rubbing his head against me. I fluffed the feathers near his wings, then paused when I felt something bumpy. Then I plunged my fingers deeper to see what it was. The bumps were scars. Anger burned through me. I couldn't imagine the damage Dagon must have done to leave permanent scars on a creature that healed nearly as well as I did. Thank all the gods that the Nordic vampire had been loose-lipped. If not for him telling me about Dagon's blood-tracking spell, Silver would be back in the cruelest of captivities. Also, Dagon could profit from a creature that was created to be cherished. Silver, I cried out, leaping up in excitement. That startled the Simargal so much he flew back until his new leash stopped him. I began to soothe him at once, all while Ian eyed me as if I'd lost my mind. I'm not crazy, I announced, then laughed when the couple nearest us overheard that and did a double take. Yes, I suppose that was hardly a ringing endorsement of anyone's sanity. I know how we can bring Dagon to us as soon as we want.
Cut off your warding spell on my brand,
Ian replied. I waved at his crotch. Not that, though that would do it too. Still, then Dagon would know it was a trap since you'd never accidentally do that. But if I let the blocking spell on Silver's blood dissipate, Dagon will be able to trace him again. He knows Silver's with us. And Dagon's arrogant enough to believe his magic poked a hole through my spell. If Dagon thinks he overpowered my magic, he shouldn't expect a trap. Even better, my father couldn't punish me for breaking his command. Dagon would strike as soon as he saw me. Then whatever I did to protect myself could legitimately be called self-defense. For a split second, alarm passed over Ian's face. I couldn't imagine why, but then it was gone as if it had never been there.
Arrogant or no, Dagon is no fool. He'll still come in force. We'd need all our combined strength to kill him, plus several spelled mirrors at the ready.
Why did anything he say have the ability to surprise me anymore? You're intending to use the mirror trap on Dagon? I certainly had been, but I hadn't shared that with Ian. He gave me an amused look.
Why do you think I tested it on you first? Believe me, there were many other ways I could have won that bet between us.
You think? I said, grinning because I had hope again. He leaned down.
Not think, he murmured. No, just like I knew I had to have you, even when I despised you for what I thought you'd done.
His nearness was distracting enough. When his mouth slid to the most sensitive spot on my throat, I almost forgot what we were talking about. When he lightly bit it, desire shot through me like an arrow fired from a high-tension crossbow. I'd never murder an innocent, I managed to gasp out. Just because Katie was born different doesn't mean she was born wrong. Actions, not existence, define character.
I couldn't agree more,
he growled against my skin before a slow lick made me shudder.
All my instincts told me that about you. Yet I'd seen you at that execution. Couldn't reconcile it with what my gut told me until your drunken confession.
More and more I was glad I'd gotten completely wasted the other night. That also was very much not like me. But here I was, an apparent proud binge drinker.
Stop,
I said, pushing him back reluctantly. We have work to do. Call Menkaris and try to settle him down. Once we have him taken care of, we'll move on to getting those mirrors ready for Dagon. A slight grin curled his mouth.
Any more orders?
Dozens of explicit ones instantly raced through my mind. Ian inhaled as if tasting the air.
I miss your true scent when you're aroused. This one smells the way you look, boring and sweet. But when your glamour drops and you are as you were meant to be.
Another inhalation brought his mouth to my throat again.
Your scent reminds me of spring rains during a lightning storm. Wild, pure, deadly, and stunningly beautiful. just like you are.
I closed my eyes, letting his voice, words, and nearness wash over me. I'd never had someone affect me on so many levels. The part of me that loved it greedily gulped at every mystifying sensation. But the logical part said that all of this would only turn to pain. Worse, I knew the logical part was right. Ian needed me now, but when he didn't, he'd be gone. He'd made no pretense about that. He might be enjoying the perks of our being thrown together, but I was the only one feeling things on a deeper level. That had to stop, before Shun Chong wasn't the only one nursing a confused and wounded heart. Save your compliments for later, I said, opening my eyes. We've got too much work to do now. Now Ian's smile was also part smirk.
Love raising those shields back up, don't you?
When they were the only things protecting me from an onslaught of emotions I alone was feeling?
Yes.
I don't know what you mean, but don't you have a call to make?
So I do.
He went to the person nearest us, gave him a few flashes from his gaze, then walked back holding his mobile phone. Once he punched in Menkeri's number, it was answered on his second ring.
Menkeri's, Ian said in a bright, chipper voice. Got your 15 messages. Is it true?
I was standing so close to Ian, I could hear Menkeri's clearly. The former pharaoh had never sounded more upset.
Did you actually get married?
Ian winced, but said,
Seems good news travels fast.
In the lightest of tones. If I hadn't known how much he hadn't wanted news of this sham to reach Menkeri's, I never would have guessed what it cost him to confirm that. Silence for a full, very uncomfortable minute. Then Menkeri said,
Are you still in New York City?
In a tone so flat, I was rattled. Menkeri's being upset was one thing. His sounding this cold usually meant that people were going to die.
For the moment, Ian replied. But we're leaving soon. I am already here,
Menkeri's interrupted.
I flew in as soon as word of where you were and what you did reached me.
Ian rolled his eyes.
Of course you did.
Then he shook his head at me as if to say, Parents, what are you going to do?
We'll stop by. Staying at the Ritz or the Waldorf. The Ritz,
Menkeri's replied crisply.
Penthouse suite. Come now and do not bring her with you.
Her? I didn't even merit being called by my name. Menkeri's normally faultless manners predated chivalry by so many thousands of years. I'd often wondered if he'd been the one to invent it. Now I was her. He must have been truly furious.
See you shortly,
Ian said, and hung up. I gave him a look after I double-checked that he truly disconnected the call. You know I'm coming with you, right? Ian's laughter was as careless as the tone he'd used when confirming the marriage he'd never wanted.
As you reminded Shun Chong, where one vampire spouse is, the other is allowed, regardless. But you do need to change.
His gaze took in my mismatched clothes and two big shoes, while letting out a thudding sound.
Can't have you seeing your new father-in-law looking like a street sweeper.
Unless I compel someone to switch their clothes with me, I don't see how my outfit can improve. We left our wallets back in the hotel room those vampires trashed, remember?
Don't you know a troll that owes you a truckload of gold?
He countered. He doesn't owe me, I corrected, but Ian was right. I'd never intended to pick up the gold Nekton promised me, but it would be a lot easier to convert some of that into cash at a local pawn shop than it would be to get the new identification I'd need in order to access my accounts. Cash would also be harder to trace us with. Nekton it was, then.
Let's swing by Central Park.
Chapter 29 It only took pawning one of Nekton's lake offerings for both Ian and me to look much nicer. I pawned a few more items for traveling money, then stored the rest at a warehouse I hastily rented. Driving around in a truck filled with gold left us primed for more trouble than we already had. But as soon as we stepped through the doorway of Menkeri's penthouse suite, I knew this would be much worse than meeting a disapproving in-law. Ian saw it right away, too.
What is this? An intervention? He demanded of the three men and the single woman who were lined up around the hotel's doorway. You look as if you're poised to attack.
We are, if you try to leave,
Menkeri's replied in a bitingly smooth tone.
And I told you not to bring her.
Her is here anyway, I said, irritation making me ignore the terrible grammar of the statement. I recognized all of them, though I didn't remember meeting the tall, lanky vampire with the black spiky hair before now. From Ian's dossier, I knew he was Spade, real name Charles de Mortimer, married to a human, of all things. He might be dressed as if he was attending a fancy brunch, but he held himself with a fighter's coiled poise. Dangerous, though not the biggest threat in the room, Menkeri's was, and after him, his co-ruler, Bones. Bones and Cat had changed their appearance. Bones's short, curly dark hair was now ash blonde, and so long it concealed parts of his handsome face. Likewise, Cat's eye-catching crimson locks were now such a drab shade of brown. The box of color it came from must have been labeled, who cares? She'd also styled it so that one side fell all the way forward, shielding almost half her face. Glamour would have been an easier, more effective disguise, but to each their own. The last time I'd seen them had been at their daughter's supposed execution. When I met Cat's wintry gray gaze, I immediately upgraded her dangerousness above Bones. He might be older, yet icy spikes didn't dig into my spine when I looked into Bones's eyes. Cat must still have access to the most dangerous magic of all, grave power. Only a few people in the world could wield it, and it was nearly unbeatable. With how Cat stared straight through me as if I were already slain on the ground, she was about to kill me with it. No wonder Menkeri's had said not to bring me. If I'd known Cat and Bones were here, I wouldn't have come. I'd want to slaughter me too if I were them. Now I had to do something drastic, unless I wanted bodies to start hitting the floor. I know your daughter's still alive, I said bluntly. It was a shapeshifter that was decapitated, not her. You have nothing to fear. I will continue to keep her secret. For some reason, the person who appeared most shocked was Spade. He gaped at me as if I'd just pulled a lightning bolt out of my ass. But you're a law guardian, he sputtered. Yes, I said, with all the pride I still felt in my job. And the laws were originally made to protect people, not to oppress them. Some have been twisted over time, but none state that mixed species children are illegal. Only fear and bigotry have made that claim, and I have no duty to uphold those. Cat's gaze flicked to Ian for an instant before lasering back on me. Is this bullshit, or is she for real? Ian grunted.
Reaper, you have no idea how real she is on this topic. Katie's secret is safe with her. She gave you the sword coated in Denise's blood to ensure that, remember? Shut it, Ian! Spade snarled.
Ah, now Spade's shock made sense. The human Spade had married was named Denise, but from Ian's comment, Denise wasn't merely human. She was also the demon-branded shapeshifter. Your wife is safe from me, too, I told Spade.
I don't believe you.
The softly spoken words came from Menkeri's. He hadn't moved, but all at once, the air became charged with so much energy it was painful.
I have seen firsthand how you helped imprison and kill many whose only crimes were being different. Why should I think you've changed?
Ian's brows rose as he glanced at me, seeing if I'd deny Menkeri's claims. It sounds worse than it is, I began. The air around me suddenly compressed as if it had turned into a massive fist. My bones broke and I felt a new, ominous pressure on my neck. Was he really threatening to decapitate me? If he did, as soon as I came back from the dead, I'd hit him with a spell that would make him regret it for the next 100 years.
Stop this at once, Ian ordered in a furious tone.
At the same time, I choked out, Damn it, Menkeri's, allow me to prove it. Or have you forgotten I gave you the benefit of the doubt when the council was screaming for your head? Whether it was my reminder or Ian's directive, the punishing pressure ceased, allowing my bones to stop snapping like dry twigs.
Speak, Menkerry said shortly.
Ian put his arm around me, his glare telling Menkerry's everything I was thinking about his treatment of me. But like many new members of a family, I had to suck up some insult for the greater good. Still, as I healed, I ground out a curse in Sumerian that Ian chuckled at because, of course, he was able to translate it. Then, with a muttered grumble, I dropped my glamour. What was revealing one more secret? I might as well start telling everyone I passed on the street the truth about me, too. Menkerry's drew in a breath when he saw silver replace my ordinary blonde hair, with streaks of gold and blue woven through it. Then he made an incoherent sound when I grew several inches, and my body filled out into curves and muscles that strained every button and seam on my elegant pantsuit. I knew the moment my face changed to its true visage, that's when my real name slipped from his lips, and he took a step backward, which seemed to shock Cat and Bones more than my new appearance.
Ariel,
Menkerry said in a stunned whisper. Ian looked intrigued.
You recognize her in her true form?
Yes. Menkerry still sounded slightly dazed.
Ariel is the most powerful witch I ever encountered. She also helped me funnel countless practicing vampires, witches, mages, and demonkin to safety during the Great Purge.
That's what it was called when the council wrote new laws oppressing anyone who wasn't a normal vampire, I clarified. I was only an enforcer back then, but it still gave me access to information on upcoming raids. I shared that information with Menkerry's. Only he believed it came from a true-born vampire witch named Ariel, and not the new enforcer known as Veritas. Menkerry shook his head as if to clear it.
But you, as Veritas, still rounded up and arrested many.
I shrugged. Only the ones who used their inborn power or skills to harm others. There are always bad apples, Menkerry's. I gave those to the council. Then the council believed they'd succeeded in decimating the dangerous parts of the population. If they hadn't, the raids would have continued. Plus, I wouldn't have been trusted with more high-level intelligence. Ian began to laugh.
That's how Necton knew you. This whole time you've been working for the council while using their information against them. I am so hard for you right now.
I looked, and no, he wasn't lying.
I must not have been the only one who decided to get visual confirmation.
Bones cleared his throat in a pointed way.
Now's not the time for that, Ian. Despite these unexpected revelations, we all came here for a reason. That reason hasn't changed, even if my intention to murder your wife has.
All humor and erectness left Ian.
You intended to do what, Crispin?
Kill your new wife, Cat repeated bluntly. Then she shot me a half-apologetic, half-defiant look. I returned it with a hard one of my own. New family or no, I didn't take death threats lightly. We thought she was using you to try to get to Katie, Cat went on. I always wondered if she knew more than she'd let on at the execution. I'll never forget the look she gave me when she handed me that sword. You couldn't translate shut up and take it, I muttered. And unless there was an extreme ulterior motive, why would a law guardian marry you? Cat continued, turning her attention to Ian. You're allergic to monogamy, following the law, and telling the truth. I mean, I love you and all.
I can see that,
he interjected sarcastically. But you're the last, and I mean last person a stick-up-her-ass law guardian would want to marry. I bristled at that. Not that Cat cared. And for the life of me, I can't imagine why you'd marry her, Kat went on. We came here to figure out if she blackmailed you with one of your many crimes, since the Ian I know would never willingly marry.
I would have said the same about Crispin once,
Ian replied, pinpricks of emerald gleaming in his gaze.
Or Menkerry's, or even Charles. Yet here we are, married men all. In truth, I should blame you lot. You must have weaponized matrimony and made it airborne.
You see? Cat turned to Bones. Who says that sort of thing if they're happily married? Ian rolled his eyes.
Did you think an exchange of blood and some vows would change who I am? Nothing will. And if Veritas accepts that, my oldest friends should too.
Spade made an exasperated noise.
We are your oldest friends. That's why we know you wouldn't choose to bind yourself with unbreakable vows. You gleefully mock them instead.
I'd heard enough. If you truly knew Ian, you'd know he has more honor than the rest of you would dare aspire to. Kat's eyes bugged.
We're talking about this Ian, right?
They had no idea what Ian had sacrificed for them.
Yes, this Ian.
Then my voice thickened with everything he still wouldn't tell them, despite his silence possibly costing him his life and his soul.
The one any woman would be proud to call her husband, and the same one any smart person would be honored to call their friend.
Did she just call us stupid? Kat whispered to Bones.
I believe so,
Bones drawled. Spade stared at me as if I fascinated him.
I've never seen someone shagged into a state of witlessness before. Then I pity your wife,
Ian snapped before I could give my own rude rejoinder.
Up your bedroom game, Charles, before Denise finds someone who will. More importantly,
his fangs came out as he snarled the rest.
The next person who insults her will get their mouth shoved up their own arse.
A look of amazement crossed Bones's features.
You're genuinely offended. On someone else's behalf.
He said it as if he couldn't believe the words were crossing his lips. Then his dark brown gaze turned stony.
I can believe you indulging in a serious fling, but marrying? That's fallen off your promiscuity wagon so hard you've shattered the earth's crust. This is barely early days of dating. How long have you two been together? Weeks, at most?
Ian gave him an irritated glare.
Refresh my memory, Crispin. Did you fall in love with Kat the first night you met her, or did you hold all the way out until the second?
Bones glanced away.
That's not the same.
Ian snorted.
Yes, there's the very marked difference of how our dear Reaper kept trying to kill you back then. That said, we're all old enough to know straight away when someone is merely more of the same, or truly special.
His look my way lasted only a second, but it felt as tangible as a caress.
As soon as I had my first real encounter with Veritas, I knew no one else could compare. More importantly, I knew she was mine.
I forced a smile, while it felt like I was being mercilessly squeezed on the inside this time. He was only saying it to sell this sham, but God's help me, I wished it were true.
It was for me.
Dangerously so. I'd known in an hour how unique Ian was, and he hadn't stopped surprising me since. Worse, in a mere 2 weeks, I was possessive of him in ways I'd never experienced before. Had shared nearly every secret I had with him, and had found him increasingly fascinating and irresistible. Could this be what people felt when they were falling in love? If so, it was more powerful than any magic I'd ever encountered. Spade leaned closer to Menkaure's.
You said Ariel is a powerful witch?
He asked in a low whisper.
Maybe she used a spell to force him into thinking he wanted to marry her?
I was debating turning him into a proverbial toad when Ian flew at him.
Warned you, mate. Now pucker up.
Then he froze in midair, his hands on Spade's ankles as if he'd been about to grab them, to flip Spade's ass up and his head low. Kat raised a brow at Bones, but he shook his head.
Enough,
Menkaure said, revealing it was he who'd used his power to stop Ian.
Spade, you do not want to see what Ariel can do when she's angry. And also, you were being very rude. Seemed to be a fair question, Spade muttered.
Sure, why wouldn't everyone assume I'd used witchcraft to force Ian into marrying me? My voice was withering, probably because Spade had had the right idea, just the wrong persuasion method. If I didn't know that they were acting out of genuine concern for Ian, I'd show them some real witchcraft right now. It's what every new bride wants to hear, isn't it? A strained pause, then Kat said,
Maybe we should all start over,
This isn't what we thought it was, obviously.
Indeed, Ian said in an icy tone. Now let me down.
Menkaris grunted.
Not until you renounce your threat. Charles needs to apologize first.
Ian's voice was tight, either from continued anger at Spade, or from being frozen with his head at ankle level, while the rest of him was at a slant. Spade let out an elegant scoff.
I was concerned enough to drop everything to make sure you weren't being coerced into matrimony. If I was overzealous toward that end, I apologize. Not to me, you simpleton,
Ian ground out.
Her?
Why bother having a name at all? I said irritably. I'll just call myself her from here on out.
Speaking of, do you prefer Veritas or Ariel? Cat asked.
Veritas, I said, putting my glamour back on for emphasis.
When both Menkaris' brows rose, I realized I'd forgotten to mime using tactical magic or cover what I was doing with a verbal spell first. Thankfully, the rest of them didn't seem to notice the significance.
Then, Veritas,
Spade said, emphasizing all three syllables of my name.
I apologize for the unintended slight.
Apology accepted, I said, which I meant as much as Spade meant his ground out mea culpa. To Ian, I added, seriously, I have no desire to see what an ass sandwich looks like. Ian looked at Menkaris. Menkaris released his telekinetic hold, and Ian dropped to the floor. He got up with far more grace than he'd fallen, a casual swipe dusting off his shirt and pants. Then he looked at Spade, smiled with teeth, and said,
Hope you weren't hungry.
I wasn't the only one to stifle a laugh. Cat did, too. Well, it seems like this intervention has turned into a party, Cat said, her tone becoming markedly more cheerful.
Let's break out the booze.
Menkaris, I hope your mini bar has gin and tonic. I don't know about the rest of you, but all this near slaughter stuff has made me thirsty. Chapter 30. After more polite interrogation disguised as get-to-know-you conversation, I was ready to leave. All the liquor in the hotel couldn't take the edge off being on the receiving end of countless appraising looks, veiled trick questions, and endless false smiles. It took all of my control to keep from telling them not to bother. Ian's friends might not be actively trying to kill me any longer, but it was clear they still didn't trust me. They shouldn't either, though not for the reasons they believed. Thank the gods Ian also wasn't entertained, and he wasn't shy about showing it. After the second hour, he stood up, announced that he was bored, and said we were leaving. I didn't cheer, but it was close.
Well, mates, it's been grand,
Ian said in a tone that implied he felt the opposite.
Before we go, a reminder that Veritas's real identity as Ariel needs to be kept in strictest confidence. After all, were it to become known, the Council would torture the shite out of her. Then who knows what other secrets she'd be forced to reveal?
Cat stiffened and Bones's eyes narrowed while Spade visibly flinched. Once again, I almost cheered. With that single remark, Ian had reminded them that if they betrayed me, they also endangered the ones they loved most. Even Menkaris wouldn't be safe, considering his history with me as Ariel, although he appeared the least concerned. In fact, he smiled at me.
This should prove to be most interesting, he murmured.
I didn't know what he meant by that, but Ian said,
Until again,
and escorted me to the door. I hesitated over my form of farewell. I couldn't say that today had been a pleasure.
Not even I could pull off that momentous of a lie.
It was nice not having to kill any of you, I settled on. Ian laughed and winked at his friends.
Definitely an original, he told them.
I was surprised when Cat hugged me. She must have caught it in my expression because she grinned when she let go. Sorry, but where I come from, you hug your family. Ian is Bones's cousin, so that makes the two of us family now.
Don't edge away, Ian. You know you're next,
she added, and grabbed Ian.
Cousins?
I knew Ian considered Menkaris as a surrogate father, but I hadn't realized any of them were related by blood. I met Ian's eyes.
His brow only arched as if to say, your dossier knew nothing as I told you. I'd ask him about being related to Bones later. Now I just wanted to leave. When Kat finally let Ian go, we did. We took the elevator to the first floor. There we picked up Silver from an empty room we'd mesmerized an employee into letting us use. We'd left Silver there since it would have been a bit much for Ian to show up with a new wife and a new pet, especially one that looked like a winged dog.
That was as much fun as getting head from a shark,
Ian commented as we left the hotel with Silver on his leash. I let out a grunt of agreement. How much you want to bet they're following us right now?
Undoubtedly, but don't fret. I intend to lose them in the tubes.
You mean the subway? He flashed me an impish grin.
Yes. Ready for some fun? I must have been, since I found myself grinning back. Oh, yes.
Even if they somehow manage to keep up, I still want to pay them back for the miserable afternoon. He laughed.
Then hold on to Silver, and let's do this.
We arrived in Trenton, New Jersey, as the sun was starting to set over the Delaware River. We'd given Ian's friends the slip somewhere back in New York. We'd lost them after jumping from moving train so many times I'd actually gotten dizzy. But it had been that giddy sort of dizziness that reminded me of children spinning in circles so they could laugh when they fell down. Ian had a knack for reveling in the moment, no matter his overall circumstances. His joy was infectious, reminding me that somewhere along the way I'd lost that. Finding it again felt like rain soaking into a drought-dried land. How I would miss him when this was over. I'd had more fun with Ian than I'd had in... I didn't want to remember how long. Right now, I didn't want to do anything except savor the moment. Soon, and only if all went exactly as hoped, we'd both go back to our separate lives. Ian kept a brisk pace as we went through an urban area of Trenton. After several minutes, Silver started to lag behind. I picked him up, murmuring, poor boy, I know you're tired. It's been a long day for you.
Just a few more blocks until we reach the bazaar,
Ian said.
Shouldn't take us long to get what we need there.
What are we buying, mirrors? We could have done that at one of the many shops we'd passed, but maybe Ian had a special type in mind.
Magical supplies to power our spells. This bazaar doesn't have the best stuff, but we can't risk stocking up at one of my houses. If Dagon knows where they are, he'll have spies staking them out.
I can power the spells, I protested. He gave me an amused look.
Your abilities are indeed impressive, but we can't have you drain yourself on spells. You won't have enough time to rejuvenate. Al Shun Chong's wailing over losing you moved up our timetable, remember?
I disputed the wailing part, but I couldn't forget the rest. In fact, I was glad I'd left my mobile back in that demolished New York City hotel room. It was probably blowing up from texts about my surprise marriage to Ian from fellow guardians and some council members, too. Guess I need to drop my glamour before we get there, was all I said. I can hardly go to a magic bazaar wearing my Law Guardian appearance.
Not without causing a panic,
Ian agreed, flashing a grin my way. I found myself smiling back as I dropped my glamour, once again feeling my clothes stretch to accommodate the changes in my height and curves. For so long, I'd associated my real form with negative connotations. My silvery blonde hair with its gold and blue streaks was a constant reminder that my blending of species was considered an abomination to most vampires and ghouls. But Ian didn't look at me with any of the disgust Denok had feared people would show if they knew what I was. Quite the opposite. Green pinpoints of desire began to appear in his eyes.
Perfection,
he murmured. Silver broke the moment by making happy little yipping sounds while sniffing several times. He must have caught the change in my scent, too. Guess Ian wasn't alone in preferring my real appearance. Suddenly, I wondered if some of Silver's happiness could stem from him knowing others of my kind.
Were there others?
Too bad Silver couldn't talk to tell me. 5 blocks later, Ian stopped.
Here we are.
I saw nothing but the underpass of a bridge in front of us, the river to our left, and an empty lot to our right. Whatever had stood in that lot had been torn down so long ago, only the foundation slab remained. But there had to be more here.
What's the trick to penetrating the glamour around this place? Another gift to a bridge troll?
Ian grinned.
Nothing so extravagant. You simply need to work a spell. It should present itself soon.
A black cat jumped out from behind a bush near the underpass. It hissed at us, which made Silver quiver. Don't worry, I told him. It's just a cat. My voice trailed off as I saw the large nameplate on the cat's collar.
I am a dog,
Ian read aloud, snorting.
They've made the spell too easy. Must be catering to any sort these days.
His fingers moved as if he were rolling an invisible coin between them. When he was finished, the cat had morphed into a dog. Now Silver's wings began to wiggle in a friendly way. You can't play with it, I told him, sighing. It might not be nice. Or an animal at all. Before I was done speaking, the area around us changed. The empty lot all the way to the underpass beneath the bridge was now filled with booths, people, lights, and noise. So much noise.
Best deal for a love spell here. Grow your cock 3 inches in one dose. Look 20 years younger overnight. Lose all the weight you want with our new potion.
It sounds like a bunch of late-night infomercials come to life, I said, wincing. I remembered bazaars from ancient times, when they were commonly situated at the intersections of trading routes. Back then, they were one of the few ways you could experience different cultures. If I closed my eyes, I could still hear the sounds of people speaking long-dead languages, smell the delicious scent of meat from countless cooking pots, and see the blaze of fires that were the only illumination against the night. Ian snorted.
They have the tourist trap vendors in front. The real quality magic dealers are in the back.
The booths weren't merely lined up on either side of the orb-lit path. They were also above it. Some vendors sprinkled the samples of their concoctions onto people below, the way perfume hawkers at malls used to spritz unwary passersby. The layout reminded me of an advertising gauntlet. I doubted anyone had escaped with the full contents of their wallets intact. We made our way through the vendors, ignoring the shouts directed at us from all sides and the dusting of spells from above. One briefly changed my hair color to brown, then red before it went back to my natural silvery and streaked state. Another dusting of magic powder gave me gigantic breasts that popped the buttons off of my jacket before it wore off. I ignored Ian's grin at that spell, saying no very firmly to the vendor. The crowds abruptly thinned as we approached the latter part of the vendors. The air changed, too. Faint hums of magic now felt like drumbeats along my skin. Ian was right. This section contained the real power.
May, my lovely one,
Ian said, walking over to a booth covered in fine silks instead of the plastic coating that was common for the other vendors.
It's been far too long.
A regal-looking woman with red highlights in her ebony hair rose.
My beautiful one.
She greeted Ian, leaning over the table that displayed her wares to accept Ian's kiss on each cheek.
It has indeed been too long. And who is this?
Ariel, I answered, before he had to figure out which name to call me. Then I extended my hand. Pleased to meet you, May. She shook it. Her dark brown skin was warm, marking her as human, but the power tinging her aura denoted her a true-born witch. There was also something in her gaze that made me believe she was much older than her mid-30s appearance. Either she'd helped herself to some of the bazaar's anti-aging spells, or she regularly drank vampire blood to stave off the effects of time.
Charmed,
she said, then politely returned her attention to Ian.
What are you seeking tonight? 6 of the most potent spellbinders you have,
he replied.
6?
Her brows rose.
You must be intending to do something very dangerous. Or very lethal.
Ian's smile was instant.
Both.
She paused, then shrugged.
Very well. But as always, if you are caught with these items, you did not get them from me. Don't fret, May.
Ian's voice rang out with impish humor.
Law guardians don't scare me.
I rolled my eyes. He couldn't resist, could he?
After a large amount of gold changed hands,
Ian had 6 carefully packaged binding objects in 6 different bags.
Remember, don't allow the naked elements to touch each other until you're ready to use them, May said in parting.
Pleasure doing business with you, as always,
Ian replied. We were making our way back through the congested section of the bazaar when I felt a familiar, distinctive brush of power.
They found us, I muttered to Ian.
I know. Determined, aren't they?
He noted, without a hint of surprise. Then a familiar voice shouted, There you are! So loudly we heard it above the many vendors hawking their wares. Ian turned at the same time I did. Cat gave us a merry wave as she pushed through the throng of shoppers between us. Bones was behind her, his expression as intense as Cat's was falsely cheerful. Inwardly, I sighed.
You could run from family, but it seemed that you couldn't hide.
Chapter 31.
It feels like it took forever to get here, Kat said in a chipper tone when she reached us. But wow, is this place ever worth it. I didn't know magic users had their own version of a flea market. I am so getting that boob booster spell. It'll be fun having double D's for a night. Or maybe I should try...
How did you find us?
Ian interrupted her.
I know we lost you in the tubes.
Kat gave him an arch look.
Oh, you did, but I have 2 words for you. Tracking devices? I slipped one in both your pockets when I hugged you. You guys really went all out with the train hopping, didn't you? It looked exhausting.
That's why Bones and I sat back and had some drinks while we watched the blips on our cell phones. I shifted Silver until I was holding him with one arm. Then I began searching my pockets. Sure enough, I found a tiny flat device no bigger than a ladybug in my front pocket. I hurled it toward the nearby river, cursing the entire time. Karma was quick to get me with this one. Just the other day, I tricked Shayla into hugging me so I could track her. Now I'd been had the same way. Ian handed me his remaining pouches of gold. Then he ripped his pockets completely off, hurling their contents and the material to the ground. He wasn't taking a chance that Kat had slipped more than one tracker on him, it appeared.
Clever,
he told Kat with his own fake grin.
I would have felt a spell, but I didn't think to check for bits of tech.
Older vamps like you seldom do, Kat assured him. Bones drew abreast with Kat. He gave a measured look around the market before his gaze landed on Ian.
Unusual spot for a pair of honeymooners, isn't it? Says you,
Ian replied at once.
I have 6 magical sex toys in these bags.
I also didn't miss a beat. I like it twisted. Real twisted.
Stop the pretense,
Bones snapped.
You're not here for mystical bedroom props. McCarris and Charles are combing through their allies, trying to see if any of them knows what you're really up to. But I wanted to give you another chance to simply tell us.
Come on, Ian, Kat said, dropping her false cheerfulness. Something's going on. Whatever it is, we want to help. I glanced at Ian. We really could use their help. Bones could use his telekinesis on Dagon if the mirror spell failed. Bones might not be strong enough to completely immobilize him, but he could slow Dagon down, and that might make all the difference. Moreover, Kat siphoned abilities from every vampire she drank from. She could be telekinetic herself from drinking Bones' blood. She could also drink from Vlad and manifest fire, too. Or drink from the voodoo queen Marie Laveau to add grave power to that, and the list went on. If I had friends this powerful, I'd have already enlisted their assistance. But Shun Chong was my dearest friend, and she'd be appalled at how many laws I was breaking. Menkeris was the only other person I might have considered reaching out to, but Ian had made me swear never to tell him about Dagon. Everyone else powerful enough to help that I trusted was dead. There was a price for living as many years as I had. That price was burying most of my dearest friends. Ian? My question was clear in my tone, but when his features remained as hard as flint, I had my answer.
As I've told you both,
Ian said in an acid voice,
nothing is wrong, aside from my being interrogated, followed, and interrogated again. Blimey, Crispin, I treated you less suspiciously after you got married, And you might recall that our relationship was at its lowest point back then.
Bones's flinch was almost imperceptible, but I caught it. Kat did too. She linked her arm in his and gave Ian a measured look. Bones thought he was protecting me back then. If you were him, you probably would have done the same. But we love you, Ian. You know that. And we want to help. Let us, please.
Bones gently pushed Kat away to move closer to Ian. Then he raised his hand as if to touch him, but dropped it with a sigh.
I have no excuse for betraying you. I gave myself many at the time, but I should have trusted you. I didn't. Don't make the same mistake I did. Believe me, I've regretted it ever since. You're not just my friend, my sire, and my cousin. You're also the closest I've ever had to a brother. You know that, don't you, mate? I'd do anything for you. So tell me what's going on, and let me.
Ian's expression softened. He even sighed, as if not knowing where to begin. I laced my hand in his and gave an encouraging squeeze. He squeezed back, then looked at Bones.
Crispin,
he began. Then his eyes narrowed at something over their shoulders. At once, tension thrummed from him.
Go away,
he finished, his voice changing to a growl.
Now!
Bones looked as startled as I felt by Ian's sudden nastiness, but he planted his feet.
I'm not leaving until then we are,
Ian snapped. Now I saw what had alarmed Ian. Two demons were shoving people out of their way as they headed toward us. From their expressions, they recognized Ian. From Ian's expression, they weren't friends. How had the demons found us? Or was this simple bad luck? These weren't the first demons we'd seen at this bazaar. The place was crawling with supernaturals. But they were the first that clearly wanted to start trouble we didn't need. I tightened my one-armed grip on Silver. Then Ian and I shot into the air. We couldn't go high, though, as we were still beneath the overpass.
If you don't stop, Ian, I will stop you!
Bones shouted. He and Kat had flown right after us. Power squeezed me in the next instant. Damn it! Bones's telekinesis was as strong as I'd thought it was. He must have used more on Ian than me because Ian dropped like a stone. Only my quick grab kept him from falling into the crowd. Worse, the demons had almost reached us. One leap and they'd be able to pull us down, and my magic wouldn't work on them. Like trueborn witches and warlocks, they were immune. But Kat and Bones weren't. I threw a spell that exploded, like a flashbang grenade in front of them. It startled them enough for Bones's power to slip. When it did, Ian and I hurtled toward the other end of the overpass. We'd barely touched the open sky when that vice-like power slammed both of us again. We fell with a thud just meters from the end of the bazaar. Now I couldn't move at all. Neither could Ian. Even Silver seemed frozen in my arms. A nearby whoosh had to be Kat and Bones coming for us. We needed a massive distraction to break free, but I couldn't hurt Kat or Bones. I also didn't want to hurt anyone at the bazaar. What then? The river. I focused on it and pulled with all of my will, but I didn't just yank power from the water this time. I tore thousands of liters of the river itself free, then hurled it all at Kat, Bones, and the demons who were almost upon us. The water slammed into them, flinging them in different directions. It also tore through part of the bazaar, scattering booths and people alike, though I tried to limit its damage there. As soon as I felt Bones's hold on me crack again, I lunged toward Ian, but he was already reaching for me. We surged into the sky, Silver shaking the water off his feathers like an angry duck. I felt Bones's power grab us again, but we were too far away for it to stop us. I flung a stronger flashbang spell in his direction, and that invisible pressure vanished. There were drawbacks to a vampire's supernaturally enhanced eyesight and hearing, namely making flashbang spells that much more effective. Even temporarily blinded and deaf, I wasn't worried about leaving Kat and Bones with the two demons. Not with how lethal they were. That's why I would have been glad for their help with Dagon. If the demons at the bazaar tried anything, they'd be dead too fast to regret it.
Head east,
I shouted to Ian, flying faster. He kept pace with ease. Soon we were too far away for Bones's power to reach us. If Cad and Bones did extricate themselves from the river mess in time to give chase, I wanted us to be close to more water so I could use its power to stop them. There was an entire ocean on the other side of New Jersey. That was more than enough. Chapter 32. Later, we watched whitecaps froth on the ocean from a private residence near the Atlantic City boardwalk. The homeowners hadn't intended for their house to become an Airbnb, but while we had lots of cash, we didn't have new identification. Plus, a hotel would also be the first place Cat, Bones, or the demons would look for us. Not to mention hotels weren't demon-proof. So, after a few flashes from Ian's gaze and a generous amount of spending money, the husband and wife decided to take an impromptu weekend vacation. I was tired after the fiasco at the bazaar. This had been a very long day, but we still had work to do. Our bags from the bazaar were spread across the living room couch. Silver lay next to them, his wings folded around his head until only the tip of his nose was visible. He'd fallen asleep after a large meal of sautéed vegetables. For Silver, the night was over. For us, it might be just beginning. I suppose we should start doing prep work on the spells, I said with a sigh. Or, Ian said in a smooth tone, you could tell me why you neglected to mention that you're telekinetic, in addition to your other abilities. Of course he wouldn't leave the events at the bazaar alone. I'm not telekinetic, I began. You're claiming the river suddenly became sentient and had an uncontrollable urge to go shopping? I ignored his sarcasm. Telekinetic vampires can use their powers on anything. I can only manipulate water, and this ability has nothing to do with my being a vampire. Interest gleamed from Ian's gaze.
Go on.
I spread out my hands.
That's it. My other nature allows me to draw power from water and also move it around short distances. Nothing else.
When's the last time you tried to do something else?
At my pause, his mouth curled knowingly.
That's what I thought.
You don't understand. Now my voice was quiet. My other nature is dangerous, uncontrollable, possibly heartless. Unpredictable, I settled on. So I keep it locked away, but like anything in a cage, it can poke its fingers through. His brows went up.
Your abilities with water of what happens when you pull on your other nature's metaphysical fingers?
It almost sounded like a fart joke analogy, but whatever.
In short, yes. He came closer.
Have you ever considered that you're being irrationally fearful of your other half?
I gave him a pointed look.
You've seen my father. Tell me there's anything irrational about fearing that.
Valid point,
he said, giving me a quick grin. Then, surprisingly, he reached out and began to undo the remaining buttons on my jacket.
Talk about a change of topic.
I caught his hand. I don't think that's a good idea.
Not bored of me already, are you?
His accompanying chuckle said he knew the answer was no.
I gave a meaningful glance around. All this stuff is very breakable unless I hold back, and you don't prefer that.
I don't,
he said at once. And it wouldn't be right for us to trash this couple's house, I added, in case that hadn't occurred to him. We'd already left quite a trail of destruction in our wake. He traced a finger over the belt in my slacks before unbuckling it and slowly drawing it free from the loops.
There are other ways we can both be satisfied.
He pulled the belt free and circled it around my wrists.
Repeatedly.
I laughed despite my instant surge of desire.
You know a belt won't be enough to restrain me.
He leaned down, his mouth brushing mine as he tightened it on my wrists.
An ordinary one? No. One infused with magic. Yes.
A tingle went through me before it was muted by echoes that still managed to reach me, even through 4.5 millenniums. I'm not sure about trying that. He leaned back enough to look at me.
Don't tell me you've never mixed sex with bondage before.
Not willingly, I said with a note of grimness.
He took the belt off my wrists at once.
If I'd have known, I never would have held you down last night.
I let out a soft sniff. If I hadn't wanted that, I would have stopped you. I can still freeze time, remember?
Yes.
His voice deepened.